This is chapter 5 of 12 small chapters of the book Why Bother with Jesus by Michael Green. The chapter is titled Bother Because of His Offer. One of the striking differences between Christianity and the other religions is that the others all start with the assumption that God is known. Christianity does not. Jesus said that nobody knows God in the personal sense of Father except himself, and he alone can bring people into that intimate relationship. Matthew 11 verse 27. He then follows that up with one of the most marvelous offers that have ever passed the lips of man. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Matthew 11, verse 28. What a fantastic offer. I find three or four heavy laden ones an enormous burden to cope with. Jesus invites all. And in many ways, that's the heart of his teaching. It is not primarily demand, though demand is there. It's primarily offer, free offer. We have got a bit cynical about free offers because so often they aren't free at all. There's a catch in them somehow. But the very fact that the free offer business is so widespread in the supermarkets reminds us that a genuine free gift is one of the most attractive things in the world. That is what the religion of Jesus is all about. See there, he says, you do not know God, although a lot of you are very religious. You are strangers to him. You are frankly lost. Well, listen to me, God cares about that. I know, because I know him in a way none of you do. He is my heavenly Father. I talk to him in the same family way as you chat to your dad. His special word for the father, Abba, means dear dad. It was never used between man and God until Jesus used it. Would you not like to be in the family and be able to share your life with a father like that? What's more, he maintains, God is king. He is king of the whole earth, but a lot of his kingdom is unruly and rebellious. Let's be honest about that. You are like that, are you not? Your heart is a rebel against him. You are too busy doing your own things to bother about what he wants. But with me it is different. I'm not only the perfect servant of the king, I do always what pleases him. But I'm also the embodiment of his kingdom. I come with his authority to represent him and show in my life and teaching what God's way of leadership is. His kingdom is one where love is supreme, where trust replaces suspicion, generosity replaces hatred, and mutual service replaces bossing people around. I want to show you the attractiveness of life in the kingdom. I want to teach you the law of the kingdom, so why not take time off now to read my Sermon on the Mount? It's in Matthew's chapter 5 to 7. It will give you a bird's eye view of what life in God's kingdom could be like. And notice the end bit. It's only by entering through me, says Jesus, by knowing me, by building your life on me, that you will ever discover what his kingdom can mean for you personally. I tell you about God's kingdom. I represent that kingdom in my own life. I am the way into that kingdom. So, says Jesus, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Jesus thought in pictures. So do most of us. Which is why we find the bureaucratic governance form so difficult to fill in. Let some of these pictures give you a glimpse of what he offers. This section is called Understanding the Kingdom. Do you want to know what God's kingdom is like? Says Jesus. I will tell you, for some it's like a ploughman slogging along day in, day out with his oxen, trying to keep a straight furrow, as bored as can be. Suddenly one day his ploughshare hits a box hidden in the ground. He gets down, wrenches the lid of it, and out cascades a heap of shimmering jewels. You can just imagine how that farm laborer pawns all his belongings in order to raise enough money to make that field with its box of treasure his own. For others, it's like a pearl fancier. Imagine a very experienced merchant who has been in the pearl business all his life and knows a thing or two. One day he finds a pearl which takes his breath away. For size, brilliance, sheer perfection, he has never in all his experience seen anything to compare it with. He manages to hide his excitement, haggles over the price, and once it is agreed, goes off and sells all his stock of pearls to get it, because life would not be worth living for him if he did not possess that pearl of great price. There you have it. Entering God's kingdom is like finding treasure, like discovering the pearl that puts all other pearls in the shade. Did you realize that? Probably not. Like me, you may have thought it was a matter of trying hard and doing good things and going to church and all manner of dull and dreary occupations. That just shows how effective the propaganda from His infernal eminence has been. Because the life that is shared with Jesus Christ is the most joyful and rewarding and full life anyone can possibly live. Did he not say, I am come that you might have life and have it in all its fullness? John 10:10. Yes, entering the kingdom is infinitely satisfying. You may come upon it all of a sudden while slogging along the road of life, feeling that everything is a bit jaded and dull and a bore. You may have been seeking it for years as you tested a variety of philosophies, religions, or drug trips. People come upon it by either path. Once they see what is offered, the shrewd ones realize it is the most important thing in the world. They are willing for any sacrifice in order to possess it. The next section, the final section in chapter 5, is called The King's Guests. Another of Jesus' pictures puts it very clearly. Think of God as a rich king who has decided to have the most marvelous wedding reception for his son. He does two remarkable things. First, he sends out invitations. Many of those invited turn it down. So he invites all and sundry to come to his banquet. Folk from the streets, the brothels, the middle-class homes, the ghettos. That is what God is like. Willing to have anyone to his great feast of the Christian life. He makes the offer. He provides the good things. He sends the invitations. God is not the cold judge saying go. He is the man who throws a party and says come. But the second remarkable thing in the story is this. The king provides a superb banqueting robe for all his guests. They exchange it for the ordinary clothes when they come inside the doors. It would be awful if the banquet was spoiled by some guests boasting in their fine clothes while others come in dirty and ragged off the street. So God makes provision for us all to enjoy his banquet without any trace of embarrassment at the mess our own lives have been in or of pride in our own achievements. We all come in on the level. We all wear the perfect dress of his forgiveness, his acceptance. Otherwise, we don't get in at all. Actually, there's a bit about that in the story Jesus told. One man slipped in with his own clothes on, refusing the wedding robe, claiming no doubt that in his own dinner jacket was quite good enough. And when the king came in and saw the guests, this chap stuck out like a sore thumb. So the king went and asked him why it refused the prophet's wedding garment. The man had nothing to say. Guess what happened to him? He was thrown out on his ear. God is not going to have proud people ruining his kingdom. We enter it as forgiven people, forgiven by him at his expense and irrespective of our merits, or we do not enter at all. Such is the amazing teaching of Jesus. Free forgiveness, free membership of God's family. The God I have neglected and snubbed and pretended did not exist. And that life of love and peace and joy and good relationships is a party, a real banquet. It cost him everything to prepare. It cost me nothing to accept, except my pride. For I have to take it as a gift, not dream I can earn it by trying a bit harder, going to church a bit more often, or subscribing to the fund for disabled dogs. Have you got the message? Or is it still too mind-boggling to take in? If so, listen to this. Do you remember your old mum the day she lost her engagement ring? Every drawer was turned out. Every room was swept out. Every nook and cranny was searched. And then the ring turned up. Tears ran down her face. She hugged you. She ran round to the neighbours to tell them. She was quite literally jumping for joy. Now that, believe it or not, is God's attitude to us. When we get lost from him, he isn't furious with us. He doesn't say, wait till I catch up with that rebel bull. He loves us so much that he does everything he possibly can to seek us out, draw us back, woo us to the life of love in his home that we have foolishly thrown away. And when we come back, wow, there is joy in heaven over one sinner that comes back. Luke 15 verse 10. In a companion story which Jesus told about the runaway boy who left home, wasted his livelihood and then began to feel the pinch, there's a similar happy ending. The boy comes back full of fears about his reception and finds his old dad is already out looking for him, scanning the skyline day by day to see if there is any sign of his return. He runs out to meet him, gives him a complete new outfit of clothes, and orders a great banquet and dance of celebration. For this my son was dead and is alive again, was lost and is found. Luke 15:24. That is what God is like, so Jesus tells us. Now, do you see why Christianity cannot go along with the other religions in supposing that we know what God is like? Who on earth could have supposed that God is so loving, so very generous? Who would ever have dreamed that he would welcome rebels back into his kingdom for free, that he would adopt into his family urchins like us? But that is what God is like. And Jesus came to tell us, no one has ever seen God, the only Son who is in the bosom of the Father. He has made him known. John 1 verse 18. And when a free offer of that quality and magnitude is going, I think there is good reason to bother about Jesus. Search all the religions of the world. You will not find in any of them a comparable offer.